Josh and I were talking before the service started about how stupid I am in selecting my sermon titles. You ready for a couple of weeks here, folks? What is life for? What I think I was trying to work on is, what are we for? What is our why? Let me see if I can flesh this out and make it meaningful to us this morning. We are born into a story. We are born into a place and a time that is informed by the culture is shaped by the stories and mythologies that are rampant. Everyone in this room is under 90 years of age. John brought up something this morning. What's the song again? Fruit. Strange Fruit. Powerful song. I didn't know it until it was real late in my life, because I'm a white kid. John, what does strange fruit mean? Lynching. The lynchings. Lynching. Sung by a white, black woman, written by her. She wrote it too, didn't she? Okay, well, written from the story that person had experienced in their reality, the world they lived in. Us in this room, white mostly, we have a little bit of color, thank God. Keep us a little bit humble here. We were born into a myth and a story about how life should be, what we're about. Everyone in this room has had, no, I can't do that, I've been too much absolute. Good chances here that we had opportunities that most of the rest of the world did not have, okay? We're born into a privileged situation over these last 90 years, and we've inherited a mythology that gives us meaning. But the problem is that mythology had been broken down. Our grandparents had something to do with the atomic bomb. And the reality that we have the capacity to destroy the world. How does that affect an understanding of the meaning of life when we have become co-creators and co-destroyers of the world? And then our parents learned about what humans had done to other humans in the Holocaust. What does that do to the story and the meaning of our lives? So what I'm trying to get at this morning, we're dealing with a way to determine the meanings, and we don't have a good story that we can latch on to give us direction how to answer that question. What is life for? We're born as animals, and I think we're related in some type of spiritual sense to that which is eternal. But that's my guessing. But Doak Mansfield is breathing air, producing what it takes to stay alive, carrying around someone else's heart, because I got a heart transplant. Well, that ought to impact the story of the meaning of life for me, because I was influenced, made revived by a gift that humanity and science made possible. Not some miracle from the sky, but something that by trial and error science had made possible through research and development to transfer an organ from one person to the other and make it work. And I received a black woman's heart. When she died at 32, her body went somewhere else, and something that was usable came my way, and now I could be talking to you this morning, struggling to make sense out of something. Let me read you the answer to what life was for, written about 150 years ago by a 21-year-old minister who went on to become one of the most significant religious preachers, writers in England and then around the world. C.H. Spurgeon. This is his catechism. What is the chief end of man? What are we for? What are we about? What's the point of being a human being? This is his answer. Humanity's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Well, that doesn't work for me. Or does it? Or does it? Maybe it's how it is cast. Humanity's chief end is to glorify God. Humanity's chief end is to participate in the glory of the wonder of life. Come on, Doug, you're not going to pull that on us, are you? You're not just going to reinterpret these old Christian stories, are you? Well, I am a little bit, because I think it behooves us, if we bring some humility to this understanding and this effort to find meaning, we have to know that those folks were dealing with what they had at hand to apply. Man's chief aim is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Now, wait a minute. We get something out of it. Humanity's chief aim is to participate in the glory that is life, the miracle that is there, and enjoy it. Enjoy it. Participate in it. I wonder how many people... Oh, I know what I was going to go for. I know. Who's seen the new blockbuster movie? Avengers. What's its storyline, Rod? Time heist. How does it end up? No, we're going to do... We can't tell everybody, can we? I'm going to bet the good guys win. How about that? Now, that is a prevailing myth that's now been made possible through our culture, like the Hunger Games were, you know, like the dystopian myth. Humanity is struggling to find a story, a mythology, an answer to what is life for. In this post-Christian age, post-authoritative imperial God age, there is not a God directing movements in the sky, I don't think, or movements through humanity. I don't think some God said one morning, hey, Doak's dying over there in New Orleans. Is he worth a heart? Have you got one in the back room? Can we send him one? That's not the way the life that we are involved in works. We participate in a wonderful mystery called civilization that runs throughout this globe. We're passengers on this spaceship. We have power to negotiate with one another, to learn, to communicate, to find those values and those values that bless us all. And we're divided by ideas that make us special and different from someone else, rather than a common participant in the wonder. What rule has God given to direct us to how to glorify Him? The words which is contained in the scriptures of the old and new. Okay, we got the Ten Commandments. I don't think killing is really too good. I don't think stealing is. We as human beings, through our expression of religion, over generations and generations, have come up with models of behavior one to another. We've set up do's and don'ts, how to organize ourselves to best serve the hope of our common life and our shared life. Our shall nots are about what it does to poison those healthy and those hopeful relationships we have. In the United States and in the free world, we've decided that human beings, given the right kind of education, given the right kind of patience, can probably understand how to live with one another and be good for one another and to share in one another's hope and aspirations and appreciation. Well, that's a good idea, but we've got to have some values behind that. We have something pretty, pretty sinister in the world today that says that someone who's a different color, different racial identity, a different sexual understanding of who they are, different geography, they are somehow less than we are. They are somehow a danger to who we are, rather than a compliment and a blessing to our life experience. Life is for the purpose, I think, of enduring the pain of disappointment, of not having the right answer, not having the right understanding, having the right solution. There's a lot of pain in that, emotionally and spiritual, and there's also physical pain as our bodies fall apart as they wear out. Many in this room know that. There's just a certain extent that medicine can take us, and then we're left up to the process of being and becoming that changes, and we transition into something else. And I think the hope of life, the joy of life, the possibility of life is discovering the joys around us. these children with us this morning. Those bright faces on the front row. Did anyone catch that afternoon sky yesterday with the weather, with the clouds? I did. So I guess what I'm trying to suggest to us today, maybe my hard question is not that hard, what is life for? I believe it was Buddha, Gautama, he said something about staying awake. I think Jesus said something about caring. I think my mama said, be nice. I think the answers to what is life for is not that hard. It's not to serve a mythological God that's been handed to us, but the notion of something that is absolute, that is universal, that is eternal, and that is a life force that we are a part of. To recognize it, that we are not some little brat that can act out of our own need for satisfaction, whether it be sexual, economic, power, ego. We're obligated and related to something bigger than that. The ancestors called it a God. The ancestors gave it commandments. The ancestors set up catechisms for us how to respond to it. But you and I today, in this world that we live, have examples of great people in our lives, great people we've heard about, models of behavior, models of value-keeping that can touch us and lift us and engage us in the miracle and the wonder and be a part of it. Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. All your facilities. So I'm suggesting that we not get caught up on God, no God, but that wholeness that we're a part of that obligates us to try to understand how to best be a part of it. It's through cooperation. It's through kindness. It's through understanding that we are not the only entity in life. But life is made up of our interrelationship with all of it. And we move through it. And we're pushed into small, tight areas. And we're forced to make choices about what is important and what is required. And some of us do better with the choices. Some of us, not so good. And that's why it offers us the opportunity to be compassionate caregivers and path showers and supporters of those who need us. Why is it in the world, is it on this globe that people can be divided by ideologies about what God is or isn't? What we require, what God requires of us, what life requires of us? Isn't it pretty obvious that we have to learn ways to communicate and cooperate and confirm one another? That life gives us a short, brief opportunity of consciousness and when we can be a proactive force that we have. How many of you, do you remember when you took your first step? No. You remember your first word? No. You remember when you might have been okay on your own? 10, 12, 21, 48? See, we have a short time to work up and get in a place of making some determinations and making some choices. And then we get an opportunity to do it. And for many of us, and most of us, life gets so caught up with us, the external forces saying, you're supposed to be doing this, supposed to be doing that. We let it slip by. And in our quiet times, in our lonely times, in our reflective times, we get a hold of the idea, well, okay, let me make a little bit of a claim here for the possible that is me, and not be caught up when the expectations are and what's laid on me to do and be, but to be a kind person in this instance, to find an opportunity to do this expression of grace so that the world can benefit from it. What is life for? What is the what of our why? What is the what of our why? We are invited to be co-creators in a reality that we are a part of. We're part of it for a short time. Our offering is going to be so small. It's going to be so small. It's not going to change. No one in this room is going to end the mysteries of life. Solve them. Answer the question. Have the final solution. Be the point that's in the back of the book that we can go look up the answer. But we are given the opportunity to, in small, small ways, contribute to the goodness and the hope that's in the world. And I see it when it happens between us. And sometimes I get to participate in it, and sometimes I miss the point. But I think all of us are given an opportunity to answer the, what is life for with a yes. It's for making the yes possible for so much of us, so many of us, and for the wonders around us. And we're passing through. We have short times. So what? We've got right now. We've got the next hour. We've got the next few minutes. We've got the babies to kiss and the mamas to hug and the brothers and sisters to lift up to become who we need to become. What's life for? I don't know. We're still working on the answer, okay? You work on it.